Hi there, welcome along to this week's Racing Postcast. It's Monday the 12th of July. I'm Maddie Plale and I'm joined by last week's team of Graham Rodway and Tom Collins. The tipsters are on side once again and hopefully we can cheer you up a little bit after the disappointment of last night. It's all everyone's talking about, isn't it? But we still had a magnificent couple of days at Newmarket and also Super Saturday, as they dub it these days, with great action from Ascot and York as well. So all of that coming up. But before we get into some form analysis and really into the great performances of the weekend, let's talk a little bit about the big story that's broke over the last couple of days, which is the death of Super Sire Galileo, who died at the age of 23 after a foot injury became chronic and they couldn't do anything at Coolmore to save this horse, who's had such an incredible influence. Magnificent racehorse himself, won the English and Irish derbies, also the King George. And really what he's done at stud has been unbelievable. Tom, how do you think the future of racing is going to look without him? Because it's going to look different for sure.
Yeah, definitely. He's been the linchpin throughout the last few years for Ballydoyle and Coolmore. As you say, he was a phenomenal horse on the track. He achieved a peak rating of 130, RPR of 131. So phenomenal horse as a racehorse. And he's just gone from strength to strength as a sire and a stallion. He's been basically everything I've known about flat pedigrees for a long period of time, because you know, you see all these derby winners and classic winners, and virtually every single one seems to be sired by Galileo. These big seven-figure purchases at the sales. Galileo, Galileo, Galileo. He's been such a talking horse, so brilliant for Coolmore. He's basically taken their reputation from one step to a peak. Everyone's talking about Coolmore as the best breeders, and you know, it's mainly because of Galileo. We're going to be looking at other sires now moving forward, and there's probably going to be more diversity regarding pedigrees and whatnot, especially in classics. I think Wootton Bassett will be popular and several others. I mean, I'm not a pedigree pro like yourself or others, but it'd be quite interesting to see what sires and stallions come out on top in classics. But it's a really sad day, wasn't it? And I was just happy to see Bolshoi Ballet, a son of Galileo, win on the day that Galileo died in a Grade One.
Yeah, indeed. More of Bolshoi Ballet a little bit later on, where we'll get TC to unpack some of the Belmont action. G-Rod Galileo, I mean, what more can you add? What more can you say? It's even looking now like he has an heir to his throne with his greatest son, Frankel. He's had such a successful year himself. Perhaps he'll be the one that breeders turn to now the great Galileo is gone.
Yeah, a great horse, Maddie. I'm old enough to have seen him race live, and he was very, very tough horse to beat, Galileo. I was at Ascot when he won his King George. He beat Fantastic Light. Fantastic Light came there and put it right up to him. Galileo stuck his head down and turned him away like a real champion, showing that heart that so many of his, so much of his progeny have such a great heart, don't they? They're so tough, just like he was himself. And I think he would have been unbeaten, actually, had he not been dropped back to a mile and a quarter after that Ascot race. He was a very strong stayer, Galileo, so over a mile and a half he was all but unbeatable. I mean, he absolutely thrashed Golan in the derby, and yeah, Golan was obviously a 2000 guineas winner who went on to win, I think, the King George himself the next year. So top class racehorse, and by a great sire himself, Sadler's Wells, who at the time when Galileo was strutting his stuff, Sadler's Wells was the Galileo of sires then. He was the dominant force, Sadler's Wells. And when Sadler's Wells disappeared off the landscape, everyone said, well, who's going to be the next Sadler's Wells? And then along came Galileo, his son, and Galileo really has been the dominant sire. So will it be one of Galileo's sons, as you say, who goes on to then take on the mantle, a bit like Galileo did from his father, Sadler's Wells? They're certainly a great line, isn't it? And he's left a great legacy, Galileo.
He has, and it'll be one that we'll mention in probably most podcasts in one way or another in the future. Let's talk about the July Cup then. The big highlight, fantastic race beforehand, wasn't it? So much depth and different form lines clashing here. But the winner was Starman for Tom Marcond and Ed Walker. It was ultimately quite a dominant first Group One for the horse and his trainer. Do you think we can rely on him to cement this form again, G-Rod?
Well, I was actually quite surprised at how easily he won it, Maddie. I mean, I thought it was a tip-top July Cup going into it, a real cracker of a race. I thought it was a proper Group One, and I thought that there would be no way that anything would win it quite as easily as Starman did. He's obviously still very, very lightly raced for his age, and he's getting better, isn't he, judged on that Duke of York, and then this. He just seems to be improving, and he is the outstanding sprinter in Britain at the moment. And Dragon Symbol, who chased him home, very nearly connections would have been desperate, wouldn't they, for that compensation after he lost the race in the stewards room at Royal Ascot. But hopefully he will pick up a Group One. I'm sure he will as the season goes on, because I think it was a really strong race. Obviously, last year's winner, Rocksteady, back in third. It all adds up to what looks a top Group One. It looked a top Group One beforehand, and I think it looks one after two.
Fantastic. And do you think, TC, that this is a performance we can see replicated? Or, you know, are you not quite sure? Would you be taking him on, given that he might need good ground? He's been quite coltish in the prelims. Do you think he's strong enough to go on from this?
Yeah, I think he is. I know that he was taken out of Ascot because of the ground, and his only bad race was on soft ground at Ascot, actually, behind Glenn Scheel. So he probably does need quick conditions. But given he was a first Group 1 winner for Ed Walker, who's a relatively young trainer, he's basically coming up the ranks still. I don't want to say up and coming, because it's a bit insulting for a trainer who's got such a good record. But I think Ed Walker's going to treat Starman as this horse who needs good ground. I don't think he'll ever run him on soft ground. So he wouldn't be a type of horse I would want to take on, because I just don't think he would run anyway. I thought it was very impressive, especially given that Oxted actually veered across into his path from the middle of the track over to the stand side. Basically stopped him in his run two furlongs out. He picked up so well once the rising ground came. Tom Marcan's been brilliant over the last few weeks, and probably last few years, actually. He deserved a Group 1 winner as well. The great thing about Starman, I think, and I wasn't red hot on him before the race by any means, is the fact that he doesn't necessarily have that push button acceleration. But what he does possess is like the mentality and ability to keep quickening, which I think is so important over six furlongs and seven furlongs. If he stepped up in trip, I'm sure he would win over seven furlongs as well, another Group 1, because he just didn't seem to be stopping towards the line when that ground, the rising ground came. I think he's a really exciting horse. He's only had six starts. He beat the good horses, the horses that you'd expect to be in the vanguard, the likes of Oxted, Dragon Symbol, Art Power, who was my personal fancy. He was obviously drawn on the wrong side of the track. I got excited at one stage, but he was never going to beat Starman. So I think the form stacks up well, and a really good horse won the July Cup this year.
He did. He was very potent in his success, wasn't he? And if you fancy him for the Sprint Cup at Haydock next, he's a 7-2 chance. Oxted 5-1. Glenn Scheel ran another bold race at 7-1. Creative Force, who was slightly unlucky in the run, and Dragon Symbol can both be back to 8-1, and it's 10-1 bar. Now, from the older talent to the younger stars coming through in the Bet365 Superlative Stakes, we saw Native Trail win for William Buick and Charlie Appleby, who are often a force on the July course. The trainer has mentioned races like the National Stakes, the Jean-Luc Lagardère, the Vertem Futurity next. Would he interest you for any of those, TC?
Yeah, the National Stakes, the Vincent O'Brien National Stakes. Well, Charlie Appleby won that race in 2018 with Corto, won it in 2019 with Pinatubo. So he runs his best promising horses in the race and has a good record in recent years. Two of the last three victories have been Charlie Appleby trained horses. I really like Native Trail. I know people are just going to say, well, you like him because he won, whatnot. But I was at Sandown when he made his debut. He was all the rage for what looked a reasonably hot maiden. I was on the track just as a punter with our colleague, Jack Haynes, and we were stood by the parade ring as Native Trail came into the paddock. He didn't go into the pre-parade ring like most horses don't at Sandown. And we were stood with Ken Pitterson, who listeners may recognise from his ITV paddock picks in recent weeks. He's been shown on TV, which is great because he's a brilliant judge. And Native Trail was the clear standout. He looked a picture that day. He's a big, scopy, tall type. And he, you know, his looks translated to his performance on the track. He bolted up. I thought he had plenty to find at Newmarket on Saturday. I wanted him to win, but I didn't know if he would, because he's a type that's, you know, a big type against nippier, speedier juveniles. But I was really happy that he got it won. He got the job done. I think he's going to build into a brilliant three-year-old next year. I thought he was the best prospect going into the race. and I'm just really excited about him. I think he'll win the National Stakes if they go there next. I'm just a big believer in this horse and think he could be the real deal.
Confidence behind that colt then. Just as an aside, talking about sort of paddock etiquette, it was mentioned, wasn't it, at Sandown on Eclipse Day, how little horses came into the pre-parade ring. What's your view on that? You know that, I mean, we've been stood at Sandown together before and they do often miss that pre-parade and sometimes even the paddock, don't they?
Yeah, very few horses go into that pre-parade. It's a bit odd because at other tracks, I mean, where was I recently? Windsor. Basically, every horse goes in the pre-parade ring there. It's a bit odd. Sandown, they prefer to get saddled up in the boxes and then go straight into the paddock. I prefer to see them in the pre-parade. You get to see more of the horse. It's good for punters to get to see a horse in a different environment, quiet pre-parade, a bit buzzier in the paddock, and then obviously on the track. But look, the pre-parade doesn't draw that many punters to it. In fairness, you get a handful selected around the outside by the rail. It's not going to be a big deal. I'm sure if trainers don't want to send their horse to the pre-parade, then they don't have to. I would personally like to see them in there, but you know, there are bigger things to focus on.
There are. G-Rod, a lot of people were of the opinion that Masakela, the second, was quite unlucky, given that he had to pull out in behind horses. A narrow winning margin in the end. Dabab, he was strongly supported back in third. A non-stayer over this trip. What was your analysis of those two performances?
Yeah, I backed Masakela at Ascot. I was a little bit disappointed with his performance there. I thought he looked a little bit laboured, but he certainly bounced back to form, didn't he, by running an absolute stormer in that one. Behind Native Trail, as you say. I mean, you bet Godolphin Horses Blind at Newmarket's July meeting, two-year-olds. You're in clover every year. They have loads and loads of winners there. It's their favourite track to run them on the July track. And I'm sure that this Native Trail is a very smart prospect. The third, Dabab, is obviously another horse that competed at Royal Ascot, didn't he? He was behind the Berkshire Shadow in the Coventry, I think it was, and he was hot favourite there. So he's obviously got quite a bit of a reputation, the John Gosden, John and Fady Gosden horse, because he is going off favourite a lot, isn't he? He went off favourite for that race, he was favourite at Ascot. So he must think quite a bit of him. I always think the market can tell you a little bit with these juveniles about where they stand. So I suspect the first two are not bad at all, considering they've put a length and a half between themselves and the Barb. So I'll be taking a positive view on both.
Fantastic. I think most of us will be taking a positive view of the Bet365 Bunbury Cup. It was won for the second year in succession by Mota Kael under Frankie Dettori for Richard Hannon. Remarkable performance this, we have to say. It's got to be one of the top handicap performances we've seen in many years. This horse was winning off a mark of 109. How does that rank to you, TC, upon performances that we've seen in races that aren't off level weights in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I thought it was phenomenal. Low draws were obviously the place to be, so you have to factor that in. He raced towards the middle, towards stand side, and came across towards the stand side, close towards the line. He won with so much in hand, it was ridiculous. Carrying 9 stone 12, as you mentioned, a mark of 109. He achieved a race pace rating of 121. Now, G-Rod, who I'm sure we'll talk about that, given he does RPRs, not for sprinters, I don't think, but still. It was a massive performance, only £3 inferior to Starman. This was obviously a handicap compared to a Group 1. The July course is clearly Mota Kael's best track. It suits him. The rising ground allows him to utilise his big stride and his stamina. I imagine that Richard Hannon probably wishes they raced on that track all summer, because Mota Kael would win a handful of big races. Again, I thought that he beat the horses that were expected to be in the finish. They fancied Fundamental. You could see that from the trainer quotes that we had in our preview on the app and website. John and Thady Gosden were pretty adamant that everything was in his favour. The money came for him. I wouldn't give up on Ropey Guest in behind either. I know he doesn't win races, but he always goes off a nice price. Did the best of those drawn high. But Mota Kael was brilliant. Arguably the most impressive winner of the weekend.
And there were a few of them, weren't there? We'll touch on some more of those in later on in the show. Who's to note in behind for you, Graham? I mean, this winner, it was stupidly impressive, really. What does that tell us about the rest of them?
Yes, it was quite a performance, wasn't it, from Mota Kael? A race that I got completely wrong, because I thought we had a stiff enough task on. I must admit, off a mark of 109. And obviously, Jim Crowley choosing to go elsewhere to ride at York instead of staying to ride him for a potential two wins in the race, which of course he has completed now. He won it in 2020, I think, off a mark of 105. So off a £4 higher mark this year, he's followed up. And the last horse to win subsequent renewals was Mine, who was 2002, 2005 and 2006. And he was a very, very good horse. It can be a bit of a specialist distance, can't it, this 7 furlongs? So once horses get very, very good at it, they can be hard to beat over it, but they're not always quite as effective at 6 furlongs or a mile. And I suppose if you're looking at Motokeo going forward, that would be the slight concern. He's given an RPR of 121 for the win. Now, that equals the class par for Group 1 winners across Britain and Ireland since 2008. The median RPR of all Group 1 winners in Britain and Ireland since 2008 is 121. So if you take that literally, he is a Group 1 horse, but how many Group 1s are there out there for Motokeo, given that he is a real proper 7 furlong specialist? That's the big question, I think, Maddie.
It is, and hopefully we'll find the answers later on in the season. Now, at the top of the show, we were talking about how brilliant Galileo was. Now, what about one mare who's had a superb week, Aga Reed? You've probably not heard her name before, but she produced both Hookham and Baid, the horse who blew everyone away on Thursday. So we'll talk about those two just after this.
Racing Post Members Club is the only subscription that includes access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m. plus exclusive premium content, including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. As a listener of the Postcast, you can enter the code POSTCAST21, that's POSTCAST21, to get 50% off your first 3 months. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe, and choose Get Ultimate Monthly to get started. That's code POSTCAST21.
Now, let's talk about York first and the John Smith Silver Cup. I mentioned before the interlude about Hookham. He won this race for his dam, Aga Reed. And this was a good performance, again, franking the Hardwick form of Wonderful Tonight, something I was very happy to see, having tipped her for the arc. Hookham, where does he stand among horses of his ability over the distance, G-Rod?
Yeah, he's a Group 1 horse, I think. And I think that the race at Royal Ascot, which Wonderful Tonight won, was a Group 1 in all but name, the Hardwick Stakes. It was obviously a Group 2, but Wonderful Tonight won it. The runner-up Broom has since won a Group 1, and Hookham absolutely thrashed this lot. He's just in a different class to these sorts of horses over a mile and six particularly. I mean, he's just going to have far too much class for them, because I think he is a Group 1 horse over a mile and a half, and I think that's where he might get his opportunity to pick up a Group 1. Whether it be abroad, that might be the way to go for him, because obviously they're always very, very competitive, aren't they, British Group 1s over a mile and a half. But I can definitely see him winning a Group 1, and I'm very excited about Wonderful Tonight for the arc. I mean, she's going to be a real player in the arc if it comes up soft ground, because she blew Hookham and Broom away. And like I've said already, I think they're both Group 1 horses.
And don't forget Sir Ron Priestley back in seventh. He, of course, boosted the form also on the July course last week. TC, I want to go to you to talk about Baid. Now, you're someone who often looks at sectionals. You have that sort of American racing background. This horse is a real potential star, isn't he, now? Unbeaten, and he's just got a bit of that quality about him that you don't see very often. What was your impression after the Sir Henry Cecil Stakes?
Yeah, I was very impressed by Baid, and I've been really impressed with him on all three starts. I backed him on debut at Leicester, and I tweeted after. Now, I have to clarify that these tweets don't often age well, but Baid's tweet did. I said that basically everything went wrong at Leicester on his debut. He was slowly away. He raced wide. He looked green throughout, and he still managed to beat a good horse in Tamam, who's won since. So that day, he looked to have plenty of promise, and he has just built on that since. I was at Royal Ascot when he won at Newmarket second time, but he beat a couple of really nice horses, including a runner called Council, who I was hot on for the Britannia, but he didn't make the cut. Beat him by 8 lengths, stuffed him. And then last time out, as you say, at Newmarket earlier this week, he bolted up again, beating Maximal. Really good turn of foot, 2 sub-11-second sectionals, I think 10.81 and 10.66 or something similar to that. Off the top of my head, I don't know the exact figures. Achieved an RPR of 122. As G-Rod said, 121 is the medium for Group 1 winners. So look, he's basically a Group 1 horse already. He's only had 3 starts. William Haggis, brilliant trainer of these young colts as well. I think he'll go step by step with Baida, make sure that he wins that Group 1. Really exciting horse. And so is Hookham, who I don't have much more to add on, apart from the fact that I think Connections are going to go to Canada for the Canadian International, which would be a brilliant move, because that race doesn't often draw the best horses. I mean, Desert Encounter won it in 2018 and 2019 for David Simcock. Brilliant piece of race placing by him, because Desert Encounter doesn't even like winning. And he still managed to win the race twice. $480,000 Canadian dollars to the winner. Big pot. I think Huckham will basically bolt up in the race if they do decide to go that route.
It's a little rude, that. I love Desert Encounter. He's a star. If he's won that race twice, I think he's okay if he gets his conditions. But
he's a good horse. I think he's a bit mental. He doesn't want to go through with it. But look, he still won the race twice. I can't take anything away from him.
Okay, so that's Hookham and Baid we were talking about there. G-Rod, let's go on to the John Smith couple. So at York, which was won by Johnny Drama, tipped by your colleagues Paul Keeley and Tom Siegel. Big price, 22-1, and a big win for Josh Bryan as well, his rider. He's always threatened to put in a big performance like this. What do you put this down to, that he was able to do it this time?
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? I got a text a couple of weeks ago. Since when did Andrew Balding become an amazing trainer? Well, what a season Andrew Balding is having. I mean, he has had winner after winner after winner, big winners after big winners. And it just goes to show, as I always say, Maddie, that if you get the right ammunition, then there's a lot of trainers out there who are capable of doing a very good job. And Andrew Balding's doing fantastically well this season. He's a tough old horse, isn't he, Johnny Drama? Very, very well suited by these big handicaps like the John Smith's Cup. Crucially, he had a very good draw, didn't he, on the inside in stall one. And in fact, the first two home were drawn 1 and 3. And I did run out a few stats beforehand, and a lot of the favourites were drawn high. And it is a hard race. It's a hard distance and track to win over from a very hard, very high draw. And he took full advantage. The problem for him, of course, is in some ways he's a little bit like Motokail, obviously not quite as good, but he is going to be now racing off marks in the hundreds if he wants to keep staying in these really, really competitive handicaps. So he's going to be carrying a fair amount of weight should he do so. He probably just falls short of group class, particularly in small field races that might not be ideal for him. So he might be a hard horse to place in the coming weeks. But what a tough and genuine performer he has become, Johnny Drama, and another, as I say, another huge win for the Balding team.
Yeah, and we haven't even talked about Sandrine, who won the Duchess of Cambridge Stakes. She followed up after winning the Albany. That was an impressive performance, wasn't it? Is she Guineas material for next year?
Looks that way, doesn't it? Now, according to RPR, she put in the joint second best performance of a two-year-old at Royal Ascot, behind another Andrew Balding trained horse, Berkshire Shadow, who of course won the Coventry. I think she was given an RPR of 106 for her Ascot win. And I think the big question going into that race for Sandrine last week was she as good as she looked at Ascot? Because she really did hammer them, but of course it was on that really weird Friday where they almost sort of didn't end up racing because it was really, really soft ground. So there was a little bit of a doubt over whether she could confirm her superiority on better conditions. But boy, did she do it well. And as you say, I think she is a proper group filly going forward, possibly Group 1.
Big moment for David Probert as well. Those two wins clearly meant a lot to him. And he said that this filly is different from anything he's ever ridden. Just going back to the John Smith's Cup, we must mention that lots of people were on Surrey Pride and wishing that horse well for Joe Tweet. And that horse, unfortunately, couldn't be saved after suffering an injury. So that was very sad indeed. Our thoughts with the Connections of that horse. Now let's move on to a very, very fast filly. Next, we're going to talk about Winter Power, who won the City of War Stakes in just sensational fashion. There was so much good racing this weekend, but if you didn't see this performance, I urge you to go back and watch this. She's very keen, isn't she, G-Rod? Maybe she needs to settle. Her trainer certainly thinks so, Tim Easterby, but she's very, very effective. The Nunthorpe Next, how confident would you be that she could down the Great Batash?
Yeah, when she won there at the Dante meet in Winter Power, I remember texting, I think it was my old man, and saying, wow, that looks fast. And she was mightily impressive that day when she went at the Dante meet, and she just looked really, really well suited by York. Now, of course, next time out, she went and ran in the Group 1 at Ascot, the King's Stand, and she ran better than the Bare Form because they went an absolutely bonkers pace up front. She's only really got one way of running this horse, Winter Power. She has to blast from the front and try and blast them all away. And of course, there are a few others in that race trying to do exactly the same. Notably, Batash, of course, and Liberty Beach was bang there as well, trying to force the gallop. And that just ended up wrecking the chances of all three of them in that King Stand, really. So I thought that you could easily put a line through that run for Winter Power. And it was no surprise to me, really, when she returned to York, a track that really seems to play to her strengths, and put up again such an impressive, fast display. She looks almost a bit like Batash Mark II, isn't it, Winter Power? She's similar in that kind of the way she has to go through the race. She has to be up there. She travels. She's fast. And it's whether she does too much early. And I suppose that is going to be the question, is it? If she does turn up for the Nunthorpe, I suspect that the others will be there again, won't they? Batash will be there again, and Liberty Beach will probably be there again. And you might well see yet another smash up from the front, which could end up setting up for something coming from off the pace. But there's no doubt about it. She's a very fast filly, Winter Power.
Tactically, that's going to be fascinating, isn't it? Batash currently the 4-1 favourite. Golden Pal, who's since been bought by Coolmore, TC will tell us plenty about him, 9-2 alongside Dragon Symbol. I wonder if he could step back in trip. Winter Power herself is 6s, Glass Slippers 8, and 10-1 bar. Tom, what's your view on Hoods? If this filly is so keen, perhaps that could be the way to sort this out. What do you think?
Yeah, my opinion on Hoods, well, I don't really like seeing a hood on a horse, whether that's a hood being applied or a hood then being taken off. I think there are negatives for both angles. I just don't like seeing that H with a 1 next to it, or, you know. I think the Winter Power's best asset is her early speed, and obviously gate speed as well. She's quick out the stalls and she can dominate races. She was able to dominate at York on Saturday, the John Smith City Wolves, because she had that gate speed. Now, at Ascot, as G-Rod mentioned, there was a big tussle up front. I mean, Kea Moro led that field in the King's Stand. It was phenomenal that she showed the early pace to lead Winter Power, who I thought was arguably the quickest filly in training early on through the first furlong. When Winter Power gets an easy lead, I think she's the best horse in the race because she can just dominate. She's got too much speed for any other horse to catch. I don't think she needs a hood. I think if you put a hood on, you try and harness her main asset. And therefore, I don't think she'll be able to beat the likes of Batash. Look, it's up for debate anyway, whether she would beat Batash, you know, granted an early speed and a better lead. I mean, Batash tracking through Winter Power would be the ideal circumstance. He went for home too soon at Royal Ascot. I think that's fair to say. And then just got picked up late on. I think she's a really exciting filly. I don't want to see a hood go on her. I don't think she's good enough to win the Nunthorpe, but if you keep her in this kind of level, listed level, Group 3 level, and she can dominate from the front, she'll definitely pay her way for Tim Eastby and King Power Racing.
Okay, we saw some smart horses at Ascot moving there now, and the Summer Mile was won by Tilsit, the favourite. Got the better of some horses like Century Dream, who have been paving their way in this division for a while now. Connection seemed pretty confident that he can pick up a Group 1 somewhere along the line. The Sussex Stakes could be next. What does he need to do to get to the level of Palace Pier and Poetic Flair, G-Rod? Because he likes the track. That's in his favour, at least.
Yeah, I think he's quite good because he got quite close to that horse I like to call Scaletti at Longchamp, the pre Disbahan. I think Scaletti's a very, very good horse, a proper Group 1 performer. And Tilsit took advantage of it was a proper Group 2, wasn't it? It wasn't it wasn't like the Hardwick where you would say, oh, you know, it's a Group 1 in all but name. It was a Group 2 full of Group 2 horses. And we yet to see whether a Group 1 winner, a Group 1 horse won it, because I think Tilsit sits on the cusp of Group One, Group Two. He sits just on the fence there, and we're about to see which way he's going to go. Can he go and make his mark at the top level, or is he going to drop back and just prove himself that he is a Group Two horse and no better? I don't think that he's going to be good enough to win a Sussex Stakes. He might well prove me wrong, but that does look like it's going to be the race of the season, doesn't it, in a couple of weeks, with two potential, well, definitely one superstar in it, and Poetic Flair after his Ascot race is a potential superstar. So he'll have to be very, very good to go and mix it with those two. But he is the sort of horse that could definitely pick up a Group One. Again, maybe Abroad might be the way to go with Tilsit. But I like him, don't you? I think he's got a nice way of going about his racing.
I like him a lot indeed. You did confuse me a bit, though, because the Dispahan was a Group One. But I think we all got the gist of what you mean. He's not quite at that level yet, is he? TC, your view on Tilsit?
I'm not as hot on him as you two seem to be. I'm just not really a fan of Tilsit. I think what puts me off him is the fact that he seems to hang under pressure. We saw it back at Goodwood. I think it was when he was last season, maybe as a 3-year-old, when he beat Maya Oberon. He hung right across the track and basically took out his main rivals that day. At Ascot, he hung left under pressure. Not dramatically. You probably wouldn't even notice it first time, but I watched the replay a few times, and he does seem to hang left when basically all the cards are on the table. And he's being asked for more. I thought it was a big winner for Kieran Schumacher. It was nice to see him get a Group Two. I don't think Tilsit will be a Group One horse. I think he's found his level. He beat a Group Two horse, a basically bona fide Group Two horse in Century Dream. We know he's not good enough for Group Ones, but he does win Group Twos, especially the Diamond Stakes, obviously, is his preferred race. I think he's going to be below standard. I don't think he can live with Palace Pier. Definitely not Poetic Force with the weight allowance either. So, look, you've got to try a Group One, but I think he'll come up short.
Okay, significantly was the winner of the big sprint handicap at Ascot, so he deserves a mention. But who else caught your eye, maybe even over the last week or so, G-Rod? Who entered your tracker?
Yeah, there was a horse in the nursery at York who really caught my eye, Atomic Lady. She ran away with the race. It was the 3:30, the 6 furlong nursery, and she was well on top at the finish, and I love the way that she went through the race. Now I suspect she's going to get quite a whack from the handicapper here, but Tim Easterby has already mentioned going back to York for the big nursery that they have there at the Ebor Festival, which is obviously quite not that far away now, is it? It's only a month or so. So I've already noted down Atomic Lady, as one for the tracker for the Ebor Festival next month.
Horses for courses often, isn't it? At York, it can be a tricky track. I certainly think so. Tom, we'll go to you in a minute to talk about the racing at Belmont. But before that, any reflections close to home?
Yeah, I really like that card at Newmarket on Friday, the Falmouth card. We should talk about the Falmouth Stakes itself. I thought Snow Lantern was a very impressive winner. Big fan of this filly. She definitely got first run. I know plenty of people on Twitter disagree with me, but I thought that Primo Baccio was very unlucky in that race. Fred Walker could have been a red letter 3 days, Fred Walker and the owner. Primo Baccio just didn't get the run at all, was in behind traffic on the rail, forced to come out wide, followed through Snow Lantern, but again, hampered. Only got going a furlong from home and quickened up really nicely. She wasn't actually making ground up on Snow Lantern at the line, but she was still, you know, flying. Her final section will be very similar to Snow Lantern. So if they had the same passage, I reckon it would have been a great tussle. And then the final race on that Newmarket card on Thursday, Twilight Calls. In my opinion, the most impressive winner of the week, aside from Saturday, you know, with Motor KL. But Twilight Calls, a 3-year-old colt, a son of Twilight's son, who I believe was with Henry Candy as well, a good sprinter on the track. Twilight Calls was well ahead of his mark. Mark of 87 made that look ridiculously lenient, bolted up, RPR of 100, only won by a neck, but had so much in hand. David Probert as well, the rider. Whenever he rides a winner, Anthony Ennis, Enzo, just texted me saying Probert, unbelievable. He must be the biggest fan of Probert. He has had a great season. He's going under the radar because he doesn't get Group 1 rides. But David Probert is as good as any other flat jockey, I'm sure. I think maybe Enzo's persuaded me there. But he was brilliant on Twilight Calls, who's a colt that's going places.
Okay, you're right. We need to talk about the Falmouth, don't we? So much good racing. over the last couple of days. G-Rob, what was your view? Because it was a race that divided opinion. A lot of people thought several fillies were unlucky. Tom's mentioned Primo Baccio, Lady Beaufort, another one. It was fantastic, wasn't it? Just as a sporting fan, I loved it. And the sort of interference and the messiness of it almost added to that intrigue.
Yeah, sometimes these fillies group ones can be a bit of a damp squib, can't they? But this one was an absolute cracker between several top-class fillies. And I know that they've always thought a lot of Snow Lantern at the Hannon Yard, haven't they? They've always thought that she was a group one filly, and she did go and prove it. And I think that there are now, with the way that the fillies program has been expanded, there are now races for a lot of those in behind who could go on and win fillies group ones for sure in the future. Things like the Sun Chariot and races like that are definitely going to be on the agenda for a lot of these. I think Primo Baccio certainly looked like she would be a group one filly in the making. I love the way that she's coming along. She's been brought along quite slowly by Ed Walker, hasn't she? But she really is flourishing now, and I think it is a strong race going forward, Maddie, and I look forward to seeing a renewal of rivalry between quite a few of them, because I think that won't be the first time or the last time that we see them take each other on this year.
Indeed, that's what makes these races good, isn't it? That you keep seeing the same horses take each other on, and when there isn't a lot between them, as is seemingly in this case, it can switch on the tiniest of details. Now over to stateside now, and to Belmont. Aidan O'Brien, of course, going to be very strongly hit by the passing of Galileo, but he sort of got compensation for that when his Son of Galileo won the Belmont Derby. Bolshoi Ballet, the favourite for the Derby, bounced back to win stateside. And also Ryan Moore and Aidan O'Brien doubling up in the Group 1s, with Santa Barbara winning the Belmont Oaks Invitational as well, a filly that's promised so much. She finally got that top flight win. What can you tell us about these races, Tom? Ryan Moore came in for a lot of praise.
Yeah, Ryan Moore was brilliant on both Santa Barbara in the Belmont Oaks and on Bolshoi Ballet in the Belmont Derby. I think we should mention the brilliant race placing by Bally Doyle and Aidan O'Brien to send them across to New York for these rich prizes. The Belmont Derby was worth $1 million and Bolshoi Ballet ended up copping $535,000. It's just a prize fund that you wouldn't get over here. Bolshoi Ballet was a cut above in the Derby, though he didn't make it easy for Ryan Moore. He missed the kick slightly, doesn't possess the same early speed as these US horses. And then they slowed the pace right down. So Bolshoi Ballet ended up being in a pocket just in behind the leaders. Ryan shuffled about. The horse yo-yoed from mid-pack to the rear. But look, he was a cut above over this distance, proved his stamina, gave Galileo a great grade one winner on a day which was obviously marred by his death. Very sad, but great for connections. And Santa Barbara, well, I don't know what the US jockeys were doing. They went so slow, just 51 seconds through the half in a race where you'd expect them to go 46, 47 seconds. So they crawled early on. Flavian Pratt and Con Lima led from the start. Good ride by him, poor ride by the other US riders who should have pressed him to go harder. In US, you see these turf races develop early. And that's what you need for a US horse to beat a European, because Europeans stay better. They have better turn of foot close to home. They didn't do that. Santa Barbara showcased her excellent acceleration to quicken through the gap and win without Ryan Moore having to use the whip. It was a big victory for Santa Barbara, who entered the race as just a maiden winner. And now she's a grade one winner in the Belmont Oaks. So fantastic for her and her future reputation when she goes to the paddocks. And she eventually delivered on her early reputation. She was held in the highest regard and is now a grade one winner after three disappointments. So great bit of placing from Bally Doyle and Aidan O'Brien to win the two grade ones at Belmont. We should see this more often going across to the US to win big races.
I thought Ryan Moore, he's had a really excellent season, hasn't he? I think we've seen some real magic in the saddle from Ryan Moore, whether it be aboard Love in the Prince of Wales Stakes or elsewhere. Perhaps we'll see more of that in the Irish Oaks coming up this week. Let's touch on that right now.
As a listener of the Postcast, you can enter the code POSTCAST21, that's POSTCAST21, to get 50% off your first 3 months. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe, and choose Get Ultimate Monthly to get started. That's code POSTCAST21.
Irish action coming to the fore then this weekend with the Judmont Irish Oaks. And the big talking horse in here is Snowfall, and particularly off the back of a glittering Epsom performance. Let's talk about her in isolation, as she is currently the short price favourite. We're still at a very early stage, obviously. Nearer the time, we'll know more. But she appears the dominant horse here. Do you believe that win at Epsom? I mean, 16 lengths, G-Rod. It was so impressive. What do you make of it now we've had some time to sort of process the run?
If it looks too good to be true, then it usually is my mantra. And I did think that looked a little bit too good to be true. But take nothing away from her. She won it very well. And it was obviously was an Oaks. What quite she beat, I'm not sure, because it was very weird conditions, wasn't it? It was pouring with rain. It was one of those strange Epsom days where they end up coming up the stand side, row, and certainly some of her main rivals in the market, I don't think, performed up to their best. And it's fair to say the form has taken a few knocks maybe since. Certainly the horse that was well fancy, was it Noon Star, the horse that she beat at York was beaten at Royal Ascot, wasn't she? And I thought that was a little bit disappointing. But it's that sort of thing. If I was rating that race from a Racing Post perspective, you would sit there and go, oh, this is an incredibly hard race to rate. Because if you rate it on face value, then you end up giving Snowfall an absolutely insane figure, which she can't possibly be that good. But to the same degree, you don't want to do a disservice to her, because obviously she's still gone out and won the race in the way that she did. I suspect here, Maddie, that what we'll see is a far less impressive performance, but she will still get the job done. And we will see where she goes after that, whether they decide to stick to Philly's company, whether they are looking at the Ark later in the year. Of course, they've got several other options, haven't they, Love, and some top class other horses as well. So it's a nice race for her to go and just pick up on her way to possibly bigger tests later on in the year, isn't it?
Very measured analysis there. For what it's worth, I'd be on the very tentative side with this form. I'm not sure I believe it at all. I love Snowfall as a filly, but I don't know. These middle distance 3-year-old fillies as a bunch are quite confusing. We saw that in the Ribblesdale, which was won by Loving Dream. She was disappointing in the Lingfield trial prior to that. That was won by Sherbet Lemon. She was disappointing in Ireland recently. Tom, what say you?
What say you? Blimey. I really like Snowfall. I think she was obviously flattered by the 16-length winning margin, but she's an improving sort. She's following in the footsteps of Love. She basically had the same juvenile campaign as her. I think she's just going to go from you know, step to step and move up the grades, obviously, in Group 1s, but, you know, move through the season winning Group 1s. I think she's just dominant in division. It looks a division full of non-stayers or horses that trainers, including Ada Bryan with second and third strings, want to see win or contest these Irish Oaks and classics that aren't actually good enough to contest them. I'm quite surprised Aidan O'Brien's only won the Irish Oaks 5 times, actually. He's not even the record holder. Sir Michael Stout, surprisingly, is. So intriguing. Aidan O'Brien will go to 6, I imagine, with Snowfall. 2 to 5 is probably the right price based on that Epsom romp. It'd be interesting to see how easily she wins, if she does, of course, win at the Curragh. I'd like to see her win decisively again so that we can get excited and not think she's a one-trick pony.
Okay, plenty of good racing elsewhere this week. We have the Grand Prix de Paris on Wednesday. I'm looking forward to that, seeing Alan Kerr and Hurricane Lane take on some horses from the Prix de Jockey Club who look quite eye-catching. So keep your eye on that one. But where have you been looking for your best bets? Tom, I'll go to you first.
Well, I've only got to Tuesday so far. I mean, it's very poor with my column. I've been looking at the cards for Tuesday. And my punt tip, the Punt Daily on the app and the website, is going to be Kenstone in the 405 at Bath. It's dropped right down the handicap, was peak rated 87, now down to just 58. He hasn't won in a long period of time for Adrian Wintle, but he's shown promise to last twice this season. Third time up is an angle I like. Third time up off a layoff. He had 204 days off, finished second at Chepstow on his reappearance, fourth last time at Leicester. Now back to a track at Bath he goes really well at, 4 or 5 at Bath on Tuesday. Tom Marcand on board, should get the job done as favourite, but you know what, I've only got to Tuesday and the racing isn't great that day, so there's probably better bets throughout the remainder of the week.
Okay, well, if you go to racingpost.com, then you will find the punt, as Tom mentioned as well, as all our other fantastic tipping advice. So if you're not sure on what's going on this week, we are your first port of call. G-Rod, where's your first port of call for your best bet?
I think the best bet of the week, Maddie, runs on Saturday at Newbury in the 3 o'clock, the Hackwood Stakes. And I'm expecting Nahar to bounce back from what was a little bit disappointing performance in the race at Royal Ascot, which is the Diamond Jubilee, when he was almost favourite, wasn't he, behind Dream of Dreams. For some reason, didn't seem to show his true form that day. Well beaten, but beaten at an early stage of the race as well. I didn't really think he was ever in the right spot to go and win that race. Now, obviously, it was the end of a long week on what had been quite testing ground. They took a real hammering, didn't they, on Friday. I know he handles soft ground, but it was quite testing that day. It turned it into a real test. And, you know, horses like Dream of Dreams, Glenn Shiel, of course, who was an absolute warrior on soft ground, they came to the fore in that race. But I think that Nahar, judged on his previous run, of course, is going to be very, very difficult to beat, because his previous run was in the Duke of York when he was neck behind Starman, who, of course, came out and absolutely hacked up in the July Cup on Saturday. And the pair that day were well clear of Oxted in third, who we already know is a tip-top sprinter. So that looks like the strongest piece of sprint form all season, doesn't it? The Duke of York Stakes at York. And Nahar beating the neck behind Starman, well clear of Oxted. If he returns to that sort of form, Maddie, then the Hackwood Stakes Group 3, he's going to eat them up.
He is going to eat them up, and no time for a breather, is there, before Glorious Goodwood gets underway. So much good racing still to come this season. As usual, join Bruce and the team on Friday. They will give you a steer on all the weekend's action and hopefully find some winners for you. If you enjoy these shows, please make sure to rate, review and subscribe, and we'll see you again next week.